Great, great to have you with us this morning. My name is Kurt Walters, lead pastor here at Cross Point, and happy Memorial Day, by the way. Great to see you on a Memorial Day weekend, and you know, this is one of the weekends when we honor people who have served in our country, people who have created freedom for us. I've got one of my, becoming one of my great friends. He's actually one of my neighbors that lives behind me. This is Mike Dunn, retired chief petty officer from the Navy, correct?
That's correct.
Correct. All right. And, you know, we've been talking about knockoffs through this last month, really, and one of the things we've been looking at is how oftentimes in life we buy imitation, we buy knockoffs because we don't want to pay the real price. You know, we don't want to pay for what the real thing costs, but when it comes to freedom, Mike, you know, there's a lot of places that go for knockoff freedom, but there's a price when it comes to freedom. I know you've seen that firsthand. Tell us a little bit about what that's looked like for you, what that's meant to you.
Well, first, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak here. Yeah. And it's been an honor to be able to speak here for Memorial Day weekend. You know, I've served with some of the best people in the world at a very elite level. And I've had the opportunity to lead a lot of men and women throughout the service for 23 years. And to tell you, I've done about 150 funerals, and many were my friends. Mm-hmm. Me and my wife were talking last night, and we were talking about the price of freedom. And you know, I'm not here to make anyone's day bad or anything or sad, but there's a lot of going on with men and women who are coming back from the war. Suicide is very high. The military just started doing a survey here back in 2001, and over 3,000 military members have committed suicide. And of that 3,000, they've stopped over 5,000 from committing suicide. You know, the ultimate price for freedom is, it's unfortunately, is death. And when you've seen it, it does something to you, you know. It's not just the ultimate price. You know, there's some things that we don't see in CNN that they don't show to you. You know, there's over 100,000 Vietnam vets that are homeless. And they are predicting within the next 3 years the Afghanistan vets will surpass that. So it reaches home with me. You know, I love my country, and I was one of these kids that grew up, and I took my rights and freedoms for granted. The military saved my life. I was homeless when I joined the service. And, you know, for my family, I couldn't have made it without my wife. You know, I've left her so many times at home. I missed a lot of first steps and things with my kids that I can't get back. You know, you have to talk to your kids about things that a lot of people only hear about, talking to them about if I don't come home. My wife has put up with a lot of stuff, and I know a lot of other military families have, and I've seen it firsthand. I'm retired now, and her job is starting all over again. And, you know, there are days she has to help me get up the steps and things, and I'm always going to the doctor. And you know, if I had a chance to serve my country again, I would do it over and over and over again. Because I know we talk about freedom, but everybody is not cut out to take a bullet for freedom. And I don't mind doing it, and the people I serve with don't mind doing it either.
Awesome. You know, throughout, yeah. You know, throughout this series, again, we've been looking at the expensive cost of the real thing. And the through line through this entire series has been the sacrifice of Christ. And when it comes to real freedom, and the real cost, you know, when it comes to marriages, when it comes to parenting, when it comes to our sexuality. Today we'll be talking about singleness and dating. You know, in those moments, the model for us is someone giving their life for their friends, for those that they love. And as I've gotten a chance to know Mike over the last, really since Christmas, they moved in into our neighborhood in December, started coming here to Cross Point right shortly after that. You know, this has been a model for me of what it looks like to share the real price for those that you love so that people can experience freedom. So on behalf of all of our veterans, all of our current active military, public servants who serve here in the United States, thank you, Mike, for what you do.
Thank you.
For serving our country and for sharing a little bit of your story today.
It's been an honor.
Thanks, brother. You know, we just we fail to realize sometimes the cost of real stuff. And that's why we've been diving into this this whole idea of knockoff and how there are no substitutes, especially when it comes to our freedom. And so we're very thankful, and thank you again for being here today and sharing. I know it's hard to share. He said, I'm going to get emotional. I said, that's okay. If there's anything worth getting emotional over, this is one of those things. So we're really excited that you're here with us today. When you came in, you should have received a weekly that looks like this, and I invite you to take a moment, flip through that. If you're newer to Cross Point, want to welcome you. We realize there's a lot of places you could be on a holiday weekend, and so we consider it a real privilege that you've chosen to join us this morning. And inside of this is also a connection card. We invite you to take that out. Whether you're here every week or whether this is your first time with us, we're going to raise the house lights. I'm going to ask you to grab a pen near you on the seats, and if you're a regular attender or a partner here at Cross Point, you know all we need is your name, and then any information that's changed here, any personal information you might like us to update. And then if you're a guest, again, really excited that you're here today, we'd ask you to fill out this card with as much information as you're comfortable sharing with us. You know, and then there's some information on the back, some places where you can request information. If you'd like to do so, we'd be happy to send that to you. And then we're going to use this card later this morning at the end of the teaching as well, so you can put this someplace where you can pull it out later after you're finished filling it out. Couple things going on I want to share with you. We've got some exciting stuff going on around here. We're getting ready to start this thing called a launch pad. It's our next building. It's our next facility that we are going to be, is going to be our permanent or semi-permanent home. And so we're forming teams to help, you know, just kind of serve as we build this facility. And so it's called the Ministry of Construction. And inside your weekly, there is a list of teams on the inside that kind of describes the different ways that you can serve and be a part of, you know, maybe being a part of a hospitality team that takes meals out to the men and women who are building this building, and the volunteer team who will do different projects at the launch pad site, a PR team, a prayer team, just continuing to undergird this with prayer. Whatever your gift might be, we want to engage as many people as possible to make a presence in the community, because we believe that's what this facility is going to be for. So we hope you'll sign up, and you can do that on the back of your connection card. Next week, we begin a new series called Live More. I've never heard anybody say, I want to live less. And so, you know, we thought, Live More, we're going to be taking a look at what it means to find margin. We're heading into the summer months, and, you know, many times, one of my continual things that I continue wrestling through, you know, monthly almost, is where is the margin in my life? And so we're going to dive into some of the places where we tend to just pile our, you know, stuff into our lives, from commitments to time, committed to other things, to trying to do everything, to even sometimes the possessions that we have, and how all of these things, we think they're going to create this sense of us living more, and it actually causes us to live less. So we hope you'll join us next week as we begin this new four-week series. Well, listen, we've got a great service, as if it isn't great enough already. Thanks again, Mike, for sharing today. You know, we could just end right here, right? But we've got a ton more in store for you today, and excited about that. We've been looking, you know, at knockoff marriage in our first week of this series, and how we often settle for the knockoff version of marriage, knockoff parenting. You're not really, you know, doing the hard work of doing the real thing. Last week, knockoff sex, and today we're going to take a look at knockoff singleness, knockoff dating, what it means to maximize life when you're single. And I wish I would have heard this message years ago. And one of my friends this week said, you know, Kurt, what are you going to do? You've been married almost 17 years. Who are you to get up and talk about singleness? And I said, point well taken, right? I mean, you know, not that I couldn't do that. Sometimes I do that, but I'm bringing in reinforcements today. So in a few moments, you're going to have the chance to welcome Mandy Baldwin to the platform. She comes to us from one of our partner churches that helped launch Cross Point 6.5 years ago. She works in student ministry at the Church of the Crossing, but she's also a part of their teaching team, their platform teaching team in their auditorium. And so I've heard many, many things about Mandy's teachings on singleness. And I've always said to my wife, man, I'm going to bring her in and have her teach at Crosspoint on this sometime. In fact, I said that to my wife, Julie, a few weeks ago. She's like, Kurt, you've talked about that like 3 or 4 times. When are you going to do it? So this is the time. I'm excited that she's here with us today. And she's really going to break this down. And if you're married and you think you have a free pass, there's going to be something in here for everybody, all right? So we believe that God really wants to kind of form and shape our perspective on this. So as we prepare to do that, we've got a great song that you might know as one by Kelly Clarkson that Sarah and the band are going to do here called Stronger.
We live in a cynical world. A cynical world. And we work in a business of tough competitors. I love you. You complete me. I'm not just
as... Shut up. Just shut up. You had me at hello. You had me at hello.
Disgusted. I have to confess, I hate that movie. I hate that movie. And that right there was the worst part of the entire movie. I'm going to get into that in just a second. I want to say thanks, Mike, for your words and sharing your story with us this morning. I got chills, you know, thinking when you said that the true cost of freedom was death. That hit me. And I know, you know, I've never experienced being a part of the military. I have family in the military. And I know a lot of you probably do also, and friends, and we are so thankful and appreciative for what you have done and what your friends have done. So thank you. Thank you again. Okay, I must confess, I have to. That clip really does make me sick. And it's so interesting, at the very end, you see the other women sitting on the couch, and they're like, oh, that was just so cute. It's not cute. It's not. There's a message that is sent. I don't know, it's not said directly, but there's a message that is sent in that clip. It says, you are incomplete unless you are in a romantic relationship. It also says it takes another human for you to experience wholeness. It also says, unless you are married, you are less than. Unless you are married, you're less than. That's the message I heard. Maybe you heard something a little more positive, you know, on a more positive note. There's just one person out there for you, your soulmate. Maybe you heard, just hang in there, because there is that one person, and one day you will meet him or her. Another message might be, you know, all you really have to do is get married and then everything will be okay. And all you married people are like, it's so true. I've never heard a married person say that. Never heard a married person say that. That, my friends, those messages that we got from that video clip, that's the knockoff. The knockoff of an intimate relationship with our Creator is the belief that we find completeness or wholeness in other people or other things here on earth. That's the knockoff. Now, if you're married, and like Kurt said earlier, if you're thinking, sweet, I get a pass this week, I want to challenge you also, because you may have this idea of a wholeness or a completeness attitude when it comes to your spouse. You might be looking at your spouse and thinking, oh, honey, you need to complete me. You need to fill all my needs. And I would love to hear how that's going for you. But you also might know people in your life who are single, and so I'm going to shed some light on the single world a little bit. If you don't know anybody that's single, get to know somebody, because we're kind of cool. We're fun. We don't want to babysit for you all the time, okay? Sometimes we would like to be the ones invited over to the meal, okay? I want to make this, I'm a visual learner. I don't know about you, but I tend to be a visual learner, so I have to see it in order to get it. And so thank goodness I'm not teaching about sex this week, right? I need a couple friends. Rhea, will you come up here? This is my friend Rhea. We spent a week at camp together last year. Wasn't that so much fun? Have you completely blocked it out of your head?
No.
No? Okay, good. Okay, so we're going to do a game. Okay, have you ever done a white elephant gift exchange? Do you know what that is?
No.
Oh, wow. I feel so old. Okay. Here's the premise. There are 10 packages up here. Okay? Now, you get to choose any one of these packages. You get to open it, and you get to keep whatever's inside of it.
Okay?
So go ahead. Pick whatever you want. Why did you choose that one? Okay, it wasn't on the top. Okay, did you think that maybe the one on the top was like a trick? Okay, so go ahead and open it and you get whatever's in it. You have a feeling it's gonna be, she said, I have a feeling it's gonna be empty. Now, would I play a trick like that on you? Yeah, I would, okay. And it's not from Amazon. There's just a little bit of tape on it. What is that? Oh, that's, yeah. Oh, that's, I see, there was something in it. Okay, now you have to stay here, and I need somebody else. This young man right here, come on up. Okay, so here's the premise behind the white elephant gift exchange. You now get to either take this amazing cup. You don't want that? Or you can choose one of these other packages. Now, why did you choose the red box? Because it's red. There you go. I love reasoning. We're kind of making a mess up here, aren't we? No, you can leave it. You're fine. You excited? Oh, that's embarrassing. Okay, hold on. Let's try this one. I need one more person. Right here. Who are you pointing at? No. Okay, this young man at the end. We'll have you come up. Okay, we'll try this again because that's a little embarrassing that it was the same gift.
It's awkward that we're brother and sister.
Oh, are you? Oh, I'm sorry. This is your brother?
Yeah.
Was he at camp with us?
Yes.
No. Oh.
Oh, maybe.
I wasn't in the boys' cabins, so I don't know. Okay, her either. Okay.
I
remember that. I totally remember that. Yeah.
You.
Oh, yeah. So, do you want a cup? Or do you want something else?
Well, it's probably going to be a cup again.
Why would you say that?
What?
Why do you think that? Yeah. Okay, anyways, go ahead and pick it back. Okay, so here, why'd you choose that one? It's little. Oh, why not? Okay, that works. He's hoping for a cup.
Yeah, I'm thirsty.
Oh, it's a cup. Okay, you guys can have a seat. That's good. So, well done. You know, the whole premise, you know, the whole goal behind the game is to leave with something better than you came with, right? Because you try to get the worst gift. You either go to the dollar store or you find something around your house that you've been trying to get rid of. But your goal is to leave with something better than you came with. So either you keep what you opened, what you have, or you steal what somebody else has. Is that how we view singleness? Something less to be traded for something better? Do we see it as a cup when maybe, just maybe, in one of these packages, there's like an iPad? And marriage would be the iPad. That's the whole analogy thing. Okay. You know, like Kurt said, I work with our youth at the Crossing. I've been doing it for 12 years and have a blast doing that. And one of my favorite things to do is just sit down and talk with them. ask them questions, find out what's going on in their heads. That can be a little difficult sometimes. But one of the things I like to ask them, I ask them what they're afraid of. And almost every single one of our youth, and more the girls than the boys, they are the most afraid of being single. They are the most afraid of getting out of college and not being married. What are we doing to our youth when they are more afraid of singleness than anything else? We're going to look at a letter that the Apostle Paul wrote to some believers in Corinth. And I don't know if you know much about the Apostle Paul. He is one of those people that when I get to heaven, I can't wait to sit down with him, probably after I've had a really long conversation with Jesus. But sitting down with the Apostle Paul and just getting to know him and getting to know his heart, because I'm sure that there are things that I've stood up and I've said, this is what Paul says, and he's gonna look at me and goes, that's not what I meant. But he is one of these really strong writers in the Bible. Some of the things that he's written, some of those letters are worded very strongly. You know, he started out as a man that had it all. He had power, he had fame, he had prestige, and he was given free rein to do what he thought was right. And so he persecuted, he attacked, he went after the first generation of Jesus followers. Until one day, he had a life-changing encounter with God. He was walking on the road, and God appeared to him in this blinding light. He was blind, and he knew instantly that it was God. God spoke to him, and he knew without a doubt that it was God, and this changed his life forever. But then all of a sudden, he found himself alone. He couldn't go back to the life that he knew. He couldn't go back to those people, but he couldn't go to the new church. I mean, he was the one that was killing them and attacking them. So what now? He did end up going to the church that he used to persecute, and it was difficult. I mean, there were a lot of believers at that time that just did not trust him and wouldn't listen to what he had to say. He traveled. He went and spoke to the Gentiles, the non-Jewish believers, and talked to them about what it looked like to be a follower of Jesus. He was imprisoned. He was beaten. And yet he was so overcome and changed by his encounter with God, he could do nothing else. He couldn't go back to the way life used to be. He could only go and tell people about Jesus. And so he visited a city called Corinth, and it was the commercial and trade center, the hub of the Roman Empire. It was the second largest city in the empire, only to Rome. So you have Rome, which was the largest city at the time, and then you had Corinth. And it was massive. It was a major trade city. The population of Corinth was over 600,000 people. 600,000, which at that time was huge, 600,000. 200,000 were Roman citizens. 400,000 were slaves. You know, it would swell during times of when they would have games there, to over a million. There was legalized gambling, legalized prostitution. They talked about being Corinthianized, which means to be completely corrupt in one's moral life, thought, and practice. There was no religious restrictions on personal or moral behavior. There were idols and temples to all the major gods. And religious prostitution was very acceptable and even encouraged. It didn't matter if you were married, if you were single. It was a part of a religious practice. So Paul shows up in this place of moral corruption. Imagine the confusion, because there had to have been something inside them that said, wait, something's missing, something's not quite right. But here our culture says, but this is what we should be doing. And so Paul shows up and he says, wait a second, there is a different way. He was rejected by the Jews at first, and so he started to teach to the Gentiles, and he established a church in that area. You know, eventually Paul had to move on, and so a lot of the letters that we have in Scripture are Paul writing to the churches that he established. I love that. You know, it's like they were his children, and he said, I don't want to leave them. I want to stay in touch with them. I want to continue to encourage them and teach them about things that I didn't have time to teach them about when I was with them. And they had a lot of questions. I mean, imagine living in a culture that says everything is okay. There are no restrictions. And then Paul coming and saying, but wait a second. Here is the way you should live. Here is the way God has called you to live. One thing I say to my youth all the time is that you were created on purpose and for a purpose. None of you was a mistake. And Paul shows up and he says, you are important, so important that you have a God who loves you, who died for you, and desires to have an intimate relationship with you. I mean, he loved these people, and he wanted to make sure that they were growing and developing. You know, one of the first things that Paul addresses with the Corinthians was singleness. It says, now for the matters you wrote about, which says that they wrote to Paul originally and had questions. They wrote to Paul and they said, well, tell us more about this. Tell us more about this. They wanted to know about singleness. They wanted to know about marriage. It was more than sex. They were all of a sudden, their eyes were open and saying, it's more than sex. It's about a relationship. It always is more than just sex. You know, the Jewish tradition of the time viewed singleness and people who were single as second-class citizens. In order to be a Pharisee, a Sadducee, a religious leader, you had to be married. They had a long tradition of viewing marriage as better than singleness. But then in the popular culture, you had this other idea that it had no, you know, marriage, who cares? You know, there wasn't any benefit to it. There wasn't any real good thing that came out of being married. It talked about, you know, like I said earlier, about going to the temple and religious prostitution. It didn't matter. There really was no real importance in marriage. So you have the Jewish people that say, no, marriage is the most important thing, and then the culture that says, it's okay. And then there's Paul. I love that Paul always says the thing that you're just like, not quite sure what he means there. So we read in chapter 7, sometimes I wish everyone were single like me, a simpler life in many ways. But celibacy is not for everyone any more than marriage is. God gives the gift of the single life to some and the gift of the married life to others. You know, this idea, how many of you have ever heard that phrase, singleness is a gift? Have you? Nobody's heard of it. Okay. Awesome. So there's this idea in a lot of Christian churches, and I grew up in a more conservative church, and this idea of singleness is a gift, I heard that growing up a lot, and I didn't quite know what it meant, and I always had trouble with it. There was a book, as I was doing research one time, there's a book, and it says, if singleness is a gift, what's the return policy? It's hard to see singleness as a gift when all you desire is to be married. And I think that desire for marriage, that's good. That's genuine. That's from God. God created us to be in relationship with one another and with him. And so that desire for intimacy, that's not bad at all. But we can view singleness sometimes as that lesser gift, as the gift that we keep trading for in the white elephant gift exchange, right? The one that, oh man, I got this one. The worst white elephant gift exchanges are the ones where you have to stop trading after 3 times. So whoever gets the worst gift after you've traded it for 3 times is just stuck with it, right? And so that's sometimes how people view singleness. And it can be both from singles and from those that are married. Oh, I'm so thankful I'm not single. Or oh, I wish I were married. You know, it's not just single people that have that idea of, oh, I wish I were married. Married people are like, oh, I'm so thankful I'm married. It's, you know, we can view singleness as a gift that we don't want. Not even a gift at all. Let's not even call it a gift, a lesser gift than the gift of marriage. And for many, I would say many more within the church wait around for the day when they can get married, or they rush into marriage believing that that it's better than singleness. That it seems to be a more common theme within the church than without the church. And that's what Pastor Kurt has been talking about this whole series. We trade something that we can't see, touch, or feel for what we can touch and feel. We can't touch God. And so because we can't, we want to trade him for something that we can. I'm going to trade my singleness in for marriage because I need to feel that intimacy that really only I can get through a relationship with God. Our culture. You know, on the one side, our culture says there really is no benefit to being married except for tax benefits, right? I mean, you can get married, but we come in and out of marriage so quickly these days. There's really not a high priority. I think there's more importance on the wedding a lot of times than the actual marriage. You know, statistics will show that over 45% of our culture is single. That's our culture. And it actually, the numbers go up in metropolitan areas. So there's more single people living in the city than in the country. Makes sense. That's our culture. You know, in the church, that number drops to 15%. So we are, in the church, not representative. Singles are not finding their way into the church. It's so, you know, part of the reason why in our culture that number is so high is because people are waiting to get married. You don't see people getting married at 18 or 19 anymore. It's usually in their late 20s, early 30s. There's not this huge rush, but you know what? That's not what's happening in the church. It goes back to what I said about my youth being afraid of being single. And they go to college, and a lot of them will go to a Christian college because if they can find a spouse at a Christian college, they'll be good. We joke about that sometimes, and there was this thing of one of the universities that they used to do. They used to do this walk, and they'd walk, you know, it was all about meeting somebody. And so I'm not going to name this university because I didn't go there, so I can't make fun of it, but I'm going to make fun of it. I don't think they do it anymore, which I'm very thankful, but they used to go for a walk, and I can't even remember what it's called, freshman walk, and it was all about meeting somebody. So like, but okay, Christian colleges, it's not a 50-50 ratio, so you'd have one guy and two girls. See, that even that's not the best scenario. So we have this push for some reason in the Christian community that singleness is to be avoided at all costs. You know, those of us that are single don't always want to be, and so we dwell on the belief that marriage is better, and therefore we have a hard time accepting the gift. You know, growing up, I thought singleness was something you had to be called to by God, kind of like being a pastor. You were called to singleness like you were called to go and be a pastor. Or like being a missionary. You know, did you ever, you know, growing up, think, oh, if God calls me to Africa, it's going to be the worst thing in the whole world. And that's how we thought, oh, no, if God calls me to be single, that's how I thought, you know, this gift of singleness, that's how I perceived it growing up, that it was something that I was going to be called to. And I lived in fear of one day of waking up and realizing that I had the gift and I didn't want it. It was one of those things where, like, if I think that God's called me to be single, then I will be single for the rest of my life. What if I don't want to be? I lived in fear. You know, the reality is there are worse things in life than being single. And there are many married people that wished they were single. You know, the church can sometimes devalue a single individual unintentionally. And I'm so thankful, you know, that Kurt invited me and allowed me to share about this, because I want you to know that every single person, we don't always want to be single, but our value, the value of a single individual is equal to everybody else. You know, the second way that sometimes the church can devalue singleness is by comments. Well, meaning, love your hearts, but comments that sometimes happily married people can make. One of them, hang in there. The right one's out there. He or she is worth waiting for. Don't worry, you're still young. You've got plenty of time. That one's not being said to me as much anymore. I don't know what to do with that one. This is one of my favorite ones. It's when you become content that God will bring someone into your life. So then it's like, okay, so then all I have to do is just be content. Have you ever forced yourself to be content? It doesn't work. There is a blogger by the name of John Acuff. I don't know if any of you have heard of him. He, hilarious guy. And he's done some blogs on singleness. And one of them, he had a guest blogger write in about some comments. And one of them, this woman said that somebody gave her a piece of advice. She said, put a man's pants at the end of your bed each night and pray that God will fill them. That is awkward. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not putting a pair of man's pants. You know, it's well-meaning, and I think a lot of times where that comes from, that comes from they don't want to see me unhappy. I'm not unhappy. But sometimes single people can make us feel awkward because we don't want to be in their position, so therefore they must feel unhappy. And so I would encourage you, I'm going to give you a couple of suggestions in a minute for what to do and how to have conversations with single people. I know, it's weird. It's not like talking to anybody else. It is. Don't worry. But, you know, when I think about what's next, you know, where do you go with this? Because you might be sitting there thinking, okay, that's great. I'm not single. You know, what do we do? You know, I think we need to reevaluate how we view the gift. Not just the gift of singleness, but also the gift of marriage. You know, A.W. Tozer says, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. You know, Paul said that you have the gift of singleness and you have the gift of marriage. They're not better. They're not something that you trade back and forth. Marriage isn't better. I'm not going to one day trade my little gift of singleness in for a bigger gift of marriage. It's just two different gifts. One is not greater than the other because I have a God, and this goes to this quote, I have a God that loves me, that knows me, has a purpose for my life. He created me on purpose. And so whichever gift I have right now it's my gift of singleness, I can trust in my God because I know that he loves me. And I know that he's not intentionally hurting me. He's not intentionally trying to create a life for me that's more difficult. He has a purpose in my singleness. And I talk to him about that on a regular basis, about what that looks like. My view of God affects my view of my singleness. Your view of God will affect your view of singleness, of marriage, of parenting, of sexuality. Can I accept the gift of singleness from a God that I know desperately loves me and has a purpose and plan for my life? Most days, yes. Some days, it's hard. Do you believe? Do you have a God that you can trust with the gift that he's given you? You know, if you are married, value the gift of marriage. One of the best things that you can do for single people is work on your marriage. View the gift of marriage as no worse and no better than the gift of singleness. Value your single friends. Invite them over. You know, if you're a couple, don't invite your single friend over to watch your so that you and another couple can go over, you know, go out to eat. Okay? Invite us over. You know, it's that, you know, third wheel type of thing that can sometimes feel a little awkward. Just get to know somebody. And don't try to set them up all the time. But just get to know them. You know, most of us are a lot of fun. I can't speak for everybody. Value your single friends. Allow them to speak into your life like you speak into theirs. Value their input in your life. Here's a really funny thing. I am working with three different couples on premarital counseling. Is that funny? It's a blast. I'm having a blast with it. I don't speak from, you know, firsthand knowledge, but I can walk through and I can talk with them and ask them great questions. Allow them to speak into your life. Don't spend all your time with couples. Get to know some single people as a couple. You know, one thing I'm very, you know, careful about is whenever I'm talking to a friend, I never share something with them that I wouldn't want their spouse to know. And if I have a male friend, like PJ and I have been friends for a long time, I know Angie very well too. I like to get to know the couple, not just the individual. I want to know the couple. This all goes back around to us settling for knockoffs. Why do we settle for knockoffs, for something less than? I think it's because we're afraid of being alone. We're afraid that we're never going to truly experience intimacy. We're afraid that there really isn't a God. We don't trust that God will provide what we need. Why do you settle for knockoffs?
You know, I wish I would have heard that message when I was 18, 19, 22. I remember thinking back as I was sitting here, thinking back to when Julie and I were getting married. And, you know, I had this idea in my mind that, man, once I get married, man, that is the silver bullet, right? I mean, that's going to solve all of these things I think that I struggle with right now as a single person. I've talked about before how, you know, early in my teenage years, I developed a pornography addiction and carried that even into the beginning of marriage, thinking, man, once I get married, man, that thing will be gone. I now have somebody intimately I can connect with. And the reality is, I was looking for something or someone to play the role that only God can play in my life. And so thank you, Mandy, for lifting that up for us, because, you know, I think we all have to wrestle with that question. It doesn't matter if we're single. It doesn't matter if we're married. It doesn't matter if we're single again, if we're married again. You know, we really have to get to the bottom of that question of who and what am I looking for to bring validation in my life. And, you know, there's holes, God-shaped holes in our lives. I mean, we're spiritual beings that only God can fill, that only God can fill. And you know, it allows us, if we have the privilege to be in a marital relationship, to allow that relationship to be all it can be without, like, additional unwarranted expectations, with the privilege of remaining single and allowing God to, you know, continue to grow us in that place, again, without the expectation that I have to trade up. And so, you know, as we wrestle through what this means, I mean, there's a walk away for every single one of us today. In fact, on the back of your connection cards, we filled these out earlier. You can take these out. On the back side, we're going to raise the house lights in here a little bit where you can read these. And, you know, there's a walk out for every single one of us. And so maybe you're here for the first time. You're like, man, I'm not sure where this connects with me. And maybe your next step is just to return next weekend. You're saying, you know, there's something connecting with me, or I'm going to give it a shot again. Maybe there's some very deliberate steps that we need to take, very intentionally, having an open, honest conversation with God about how I'm attempting to find completeness or wholeness in something or someone else other than God. You know, for some of us, where we're constantly filling our lives, we've never really known what it means to have a relationship with God. And, you know, God, it's like an adoption process. You know, when we enter relationship with God, God looks at us and he doesn't see our past, but he says, hey, I accept you as my child exactly as you are. You're my child. I'm well pleased in you. And maybe today you just need to receive that validation from God that can only come from him. Maybe for years you've been looking for that in something else. And for the first time, that can come from the source which can actually bring completeness. And so as we take a few moments, I'm going to give you just a few moments to reflect and identify, you know, what's my next step today? What's something I need to do to allow God to bring that validation, to begin to fill in those holes that bring that completeness? And so take a moment, just reflect on that, and then I'm going to close this here in prayer. Heavenly Father, we've been exploring for these last 4 weeks, these places where we settle for the knockoff. And I know for me, God, you've been really revealing some things to me of places where you want to take me to an entirely new place. And God, I pray today that as we sit in this room from varying backgrounds, spiritual orientations, God, that you would meet us just exactly where we are. Because that's the kind of God that you are. And God, I pray that we would be able to walk away out of this experience changed in a different place. And God, even in this moment, there may be some of us who are, for the first time, we're realizing, God, I need to seek validation from you. God, I just want you I want to receive you. I want to understand my value solely comes from you. And even right now, in our own words, we're praying, God, for you to begin to fill those places that we've been seeking that from something or someone else. God, I just pray in these next moments you would just affirm your faithfulness to us. God, you would speak those things that we specifically, individually need to hear. God, that you are a God who will never let go. You're a God who through the rain, through the sun, through the ups, through the downs, that you are a God who is steady.